Did you know that Nika AATC offers self-paced online courses on a growing range of topics aimed at helping you improve health outcomes for people with HIV? These interactive courses can typically be completed in about an hour and cover multidisciplinary topics such as smoking cessation in people with HIV, geriatric assessment and integration and models of care, managing difficult behaviors in HIV care settings, and using Zoom as a virtual workspace. Self-paced online courses are offered on Rise, Nika AATC's online learning platform. Courses are designed for healthcare providers providing patient care for people with HIV, including physicians, physician assistants, nurses, pharmacists, case managers, outreach workers, and other disciplines. To explore online courses for HIV care professionals, navigate to www.nikaatc.org/rise-courses. That's www.nikaatc.org/RISE-courses, or click the link in the podcast episode description. Welcome to Nika in the Know, a podcast for healthcare providers in the HIV field. I'm Mariana Breitman. Today, I'm sitting down with John Farragon to talk about the EHE plan and some of the recent challenges that have arisen when it comes to carrying out this work. Welcome again, John.
Yeah, thanks, Mariana. Happy to be here.
So, John, before we dive in, tell us about the EHE plan. What exactly is it?
Yeah, sure. I think many of us that are working in the HIV field probably know about it, Mariana, but just to kind of give people a background. The EHE plan was developed a few years ago, and it was actually funded through HRSA. And basically, this is a plan that's really looking at four broad ways in which we can reduce new HIV infections in the U.S. So our ultimate goal is really getting 50% of people on PrEP who need it, and we've actually had some recent data that shows that we're making a difference there. And reducing the new infections, I think, really to below 3,000. So we really want to get by 2030, we want those numbers under 3,000 new infections annually. So it's a tall order, but I think, we can do it if we have the right things to implement it to make it happen. And also we want to make sure that we're increasing the rates of testing as well to help make this happen.
And how are we doing with EHE?
Well, I mean, I think the problem, Mariana, is that despite these goals, it's really been a big challenge to get them implemented. And I think some of this is due to the pandemic. I think that actually made a big difference and kind of set us back a little bit. But some of this is also due to lack of access to healthcare services. I think some may also argue that the financial investments to ensure that equitable access across populations for healthcare and preventative service actually happens, I think that's probably contributed on some level to less robust results. But I do want people to kind of understand and really to highlight the great work that actually goes on across the country every day trying to meet these goals. And it's not just in healthcare, but I think really important is the role that we play as an AATC. The AIDS Education Training Centers make a big, big difference in making sure that these EHE goals are met. And we also shape awareness, and we do a lot of trainings and capacity building throughout the country. And so if you haven't worked with your AATC, I encourage you to do so, because I think we really provide this level of training that I think is really necessary. But I think the thing I wanted to focus on today was recently there was a nice perspective piece, I guess you would call it, in the Lancet HIV in August of this year of 2023. They really took a deep dive into what I think is an important and hard look at EHE. So what they did here is that they really highlight some of the real key pieces to what has to change in order for us to see the EHE goals met and to have success. And as it relates to those goals, they mentioned the need for big changes in the U.S. healthcare system. And I think most of us would agree, there's a need for broad reprioritization of health, not just treatment, but most importantly, preventative health. And this would require broad financial and regulatory changes. But if this is to happen, it really would lead to, I think, a lot of equitable access and improved quality and subsequent outcomes, especially in the HIV arena and HIV space. But even despite these challenges of the pandemic, there have been strides in reducing new infections, albeit slow, However, real progress has been made in reducing new infections in the U.S., and we hope to see this trend continue. But there's still a lot of work to do, as you can imagine. And the progress has not been inequitable to reach the 2030 goals. You know, as we do this podcast in the fall of 2023, you know, time is starting to run out, and 2030, in fact, is approaching much more quickly, and we still have a lot of work to do. But obviously, Mariana, the path that we have to reaching this goal is more and more challenging, because remember that reaching that goal of 3,000 new infections is that 90% reduction has to be by 2030. So we really have a lot of work to do, but I think we're all trying to make sure that we're all kind of aligned in the right direction. But an important piece is to make sure that the funding is there to make sure all this happens.
So the question I have is, do we have the tools we need to make all of this happen?
Yeah, so an obvious question is, do we have what we need, right? And I think this is an important question. Do we have the tools? And I think this perspective piece really kind of states that we do. And I hope that you are listening today, who are listening today, would also agree that, you know, treatment for HIV is basically a functional cure for the vast majority of people. You know, we were down to one pill a day with well-tolerated regimens as the mainstay of therapy. And now what we have now, many of you are aware of, we have injectables now. So the treatment paradigm, you know, these are every other month injectables, two shots for treatment. You know, the treatment paradigm has really expanded to this use of these long-acting injectables for maintenance therapy for patients who are tired of pills. And so the options, I think, in the future for treatment are only going to get better in the near future. And for prevention, right now, we have two well-tolerated oral options. We have TDF, FTC on demand as well, which I argue was another option. And now we have a really kind of a fourth option. So the two oral pills taken every day. Now we have TDF, FTC on demand. Then we really have injectable CAB as well. It's kind of a fourth option. And I think likely you're going to see next year, we'll talk about this, I'm sure. There's an injectable lenacapavir in some of the PURPOSE studies, which is being studied, which I would anticipate will likely be available at some point for PrEP as well. You know, and it's really, I think all of these are all reflective of the commitment from multiple organizations and also groups to provide HIV prevention options for those at highest risk, especially in our younger African-American, Black, and Latinx communities, where we know that the uptake of PrEP is substantially lower. And if you look at those numbers, I mean, they're dramatically lower in those populations. And so by 2021, the estimated annual HIV incidence increased by 65% among young Latino MSM and by 67% among young Black MSM as compared with a 5% decrease in young white MSM. So disproportionate numbers of increases in HIV infection in both the Latinx community and also for Black MSM. So really, we have a lot of work to do in those populations. And these HIV inequities among transgender individuals, particularly Black and Latin transgender women, are also a big challenge. So it's not just the individual races, it's also race plus sexual history, plus whether or not patients are transgender or transgender women or transgender men. I think these are the groups that we really have to kind of focus on to make sure that they have access to PrEP, make sure that they have HIV prevention options for them that are reasonable and also affordable, and that they can actually access them from their providers. So the question, I think, also that's out there, Mariana, is basically how do we mobilize these tools? So we have the tools, right? Especially for HIV prevention and treatment. But how do we make this happen in the next 7 years or so? And now we're actually getting close to where it's only going to be 6 years. But how do we move the barriers? How do we promote equitable reach of comprehensive HIV treatment and prevention? And I think a lot of those priority geographies have been identified, but still, even just in the South, over 50% of new infections are coming from the South. And what do we have to do to kind of change that? I think that's really the big challenge, I think, that we have to look at.
So ultimately, how do we do it? How do we get this all done?
Yeah, so I think, we all have our own ideas, but I think in this perspective piece, there's some really nice outlines that the authors come up with kind of identifying some of these key pieces. One thing is obviously still an important issue is reducing stigma and broadening the HIV workforce, because the workforce piece is that, you know, we have some of these workforce surveys that we've done even with the ATCs. It really shows that a lot of people who are experts in HIV are going to be leaving the field in 5 to 10 years, probably closer to 5 years. And there's been other workforce data that's actually been out there that's shown these struggles as well. So really making sure that we broaden that HIV workforce to make sure that we have new people entering HIV care, doing HIV prevention. And it may not necessarily be physicians, it could be other providers as well. But we also have to mitigate some of the harmful determinants of health, you know, but a very, very important piece is making sure that we continue to lobby to fund the important programs that support EHA, particularly, you know, the AETC's the Part F of the Ryan White Care Act. You know, this is including not just HIV care and prevention, but also other services like case management. What about food programs and transportation? You know, and all of these things, if patients don't have food, they don't have transportation, they don't have housing, all of these are big, big problems. And we can't say enough about the importance of a well-trained workforce that can actually do the HIV work that needs to get done. And we know providers in the HIV field are retiring, and we can't expect primary care providers to pick up all the slack for the prevention and treatment issues that arise in HIV care, but we need to really invest in new providers. And how we do that is certainly a complex question, and it's hard to answer, but it is a crucial one if we ever plan to make additional headway on the EHE plan. So again, I think, Mariana, there's still a lot of work to do, but I do think we will get there. And I think if we have the right policies that look at the at fixing some of the major problems that make EHE goals difficult to attain, hopefully we can get there and get these numbers down to under 3,000 by 2030.
John, thanks so much for joining us and telling us about EHE and the challenges we face as we approach the goal year of 2030. We really hope you learned something new today. To learn more about NECA AETC's work and our role in ending the HIV epidemic, visit us at www.necaaetc.org. That's www.necaaetc.org. If you have questions or comments about anything we covered today, or if you have suggestions for topics you'd like to hear us talk about, don't hesitate to email us at podcast@necaaetc.org. That's podcast at necaaetc.org. Stay safe, and we'll see you on Thursday for our next episode of NECA in the Know. This presentation is supported by the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. The contents are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement by, HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government.